Do we have a chairperson? Yeah, I don't know where she's at. Amy. BJ to the rescue. Yay. This is Joe.
Yeah, we met before.
Okay.
Do you want to go first? You want me to go first? I don't care. Whatever the format. I've never been to this. So.
Good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is BJ, and I'm an alcoholic.
You're BJ.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. The restrooms are across the hall and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we're discussing step 12, part 1. Please welcome our panel with me this evening. We have Joe and Brad. Step 12 is having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. We try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So how this will go is I'll read the first paragraph, which in this case is on page 89, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Joe, would you like to go first?
Okay, Brad. Thank you.
So first reading, page 89. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Brad?
Yep. My name's Brad. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's January 28, 2000. I have a sponsor. My sponsor's in the room. I sponsor other men. I have one sponsee in the room, just to keep me honest. And Anyway, I'm going to say this because there's some guys in this room that were in a room with me yesterday talking about this exact same subject matter. So you may hear some familiar stuff out of my mouth. As a matter of fact, you may hear something come out of my mouth that came out of your mouth. Yes, I steal material. And anyway, so practical experience. It's just practical, not idealistic. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. And I always, my vision on that, when I read that, I always, the vision I have of myself is extensive. And it's usually I'm visualizing me with, three or four guys, and I'm, in the book with a guy here, I'm in inventory with a guy here, and man, I'm busy, have a service position and all that. But and this was pointed out recently, and I love this, and this is so much why I also need you guys. And you say stuff, or you point stuff out in the book that I've read 9 million times, and whatever, this point didn't stand out, and you make this point. And I don't know if any other alcoholics in this room are loophole hunters, but I'm a loophole hunter, and this is kind of a loophole. But and it was pointed out that intensive work with other alcoholics can also mean, if I'm a train wreck, if I haven't been doing anything in AA in a while, in a good long while, and I'm a mess, probably the other alcoholic I should be working with is probably my sponsor. But one-liners, I'm not a huge one-liner guy, AA one-liners, but I do like this one. One of the safest places you can be in AA is nestled safely between a sponsor and a sponsee. And that's my experience too. That's when I feel most connected, most spiritually fit, is when I'm working in both directions. So it says, also it says, it works when when other activities fail. And that's a strong statement. But I'll tell you that, I'm one of these guys that I'm getting ready to tell you about. I don't know if you run into this. Oh, you get into these conversations with AAs. Oh, the 11th step, man, that's the step that everyone's slacking on. And really, that's where the emphasis, where most AAs need to put the emphasis, or 10 or whatever. And I know that statement kind of stands on its own, but I just want to make a point that all of them are important. All of them, I'm as just as susceptible to falling into what AAs call two-stepping, which is, I'm powerless, what can I do for you, and that's not helpful. So it says, this is our 12th suggestion, carry this message, and this was pointed out, we discussed this yesterday, and this, carry this message, the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll tell you that when I used to, you share your experience, strength, and hope with each other, I used to think when I came to AA that whatever I was doing, it could have nothing to do with AA, but when called to share, I would share my experience, strength, and hope with what I'm doing to currently keep myself away from a drink. And that's not what this is. This is telling me to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you can help when no one else can. And how I am in that position is by working with a sponsor who I took the steps with, and then I'm attempting to live these as best I can. So I have some real, it is experience that's very useful. I'm uniquely, can be uniquely helpful to an alcoholic. And the last paragraph is kind of the, what you get from doing this, and it's the truth. And there's a part of me, and I have all these, I think in the 12 and 12 it says all the steps are ego deflating in nature. And my ego rubs up when I come up to the step, is because I like my time. I don't like to be hassled. My time's very valuable to me, and so I can get really selfish with that. And it's interesting. And I've been, over the years, I've been every kind of AA, so to speak. I've toyed with being really strong on inventory and weak in other departments, and I've gotten strong into the 11th step, really getting their strong meditation practice, And but this one, I mean, as we'll read through more and more of this, this what I've come to understand is the steps prior to this, all these steps prior to this, get me unblocked, get me connected with this God, so then I can do the real work of AA, the work that's sprinkled in every chapter throughout the book is about being helpful to others. And in spite of, and this does, and to watch people that I've worked with to rebuild their lives, to you know, just have a garbage life, everything's a disaster, to turn their life around, that is the coolest thing. And the other coolest thing that I've seen is to actually watch that person you helped go out and start helping other people, sponsoring people, and it is the coolest thing. And in spite of all that, I'm still very resistant to this. So that's all I've got.
Thanks, Brent. My name is Joseph Brusbank, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Joe.
My sobriety date is November 24th, 1991. And it's a real privilege and an honor to be here before you tonight. Thank you, David, for getting in touch with me and asking me. It started with a member of my home group. They asked me for my name and number, and then they passed it on to David. So I'm glad to be here. This is my first time at this meeting. And like I said, it's anytime I can do something for Alcoholics Anonymous, it really is a privilege and an honor. The 12th step here, you know, this practical experience, I delved into that a lot when I first got sober. I would have those terrible days at work, and I felt like drinking. You know, drinking was a solution for me, and I did not want to go back to that life, but I'm going through this issue, this problem, and, you know, I called my sponsor begrudgingly, and he said, why don't you go to a meeting? You know, why don't you talk about what's going on with you and then try to help somebody else, because it gets you out of yourself. I begrudgingly did that, you know, and I have never regretted that. Anytime I'm feeling that way, all these years of, you know, later that I've been sober, I still use that as a mantra. You know, I know the solution, I know what to do, but there's still some times when my ego gets in the way, you know, and I've dealt with this problem and I shouldn't have this issue or this problem, but yet when I go to a meeting, when I help somebody else out, that problem disappears. You know, the issue might still be there, but I don't look at it the same way that I did. And I'm grateful for this program and for the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, talking about the 12th suggestion, carry this message to alcoholics. You know, and Joe's message might get you drunk, but the message of Alcoholics Anonymous is tried and true and tested over the years. You know, and what's the message? That we've had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And we try to carry that message. And the message is, I've had a spiritual awakening. You know, I'm not the same person I was when I first got here. Heck, if I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, I'm not the same person I was last week. You know, I hope to be growing and growing more spiritually. You know, alcohol is not a problem in my life today. You know, I have a healthy respect for alcohol and what it did to me. I don't crave it the way I used to. I don't think about it the way I used to. However, there are times when I go to sporting events or restaurants and I see people sitting there with this much whatever left in their cup. I'm looking at them like, are you crazy? You know, that's like, what, $15 nowadays? And anyway, it's still up here. It's a mental obsession at times. But again, I don't crave it like I used to. And I know that, you know, it's talking about life will take on new meaning. My life has taken on a new meaning. And I owe that to Alcoholics Anonymous. I managed to get myself into enough trouble at a young age to make it to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I heard the message. And I would love to say that I jumped right into the steps and I grew spiritually overnight, but, you know, it's a journey. And some people are more thick-headed than others. But I got the sponsor, I did the steps, continue to do the steps, and continue to work with other people. You know, the newcomers is the lifeline of Alcoholics Anonymous, I believe. And it's my job to welcome the newcomer with open arms, to help them, talk to them, befriend them, make them feel welcome at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And because those people that, when I came here, they did that for me. And I don't know if I would be here today had it not been for those people. Because I can very easily compare myself out of the room. I don't know if anybody's ever done it before, but my insides never compare to your outsides. I'm always less than. And as long as I keep practicing the principles of this program, sticking my hand out, trying to help the newcomer, doing the best I can one day at a time, I got a chance today. And I don't have to go back to the life that I led at one time, you know, previous life.
My wife has a great saying that, you know, my past is meant to teach me a lesson. It's not meant to be a life sentence. And I got to stop being so guilty and beating myself up all the time. I'm human. I make mistakes. Even to this day, having worked these steps, having worked the principles, trying to live the best life that I can one day at a time, I still make mistakes. But thank God there's a step for that, and I can make amends. You know, I can say, I'm sorry, what can I do to make things right? And anyway, that's another step. So that's enough out of me for the first portion.
Thank you. So the second reading is on page 91. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he's not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his.
Yeah. I'm going to bring this up just because this is in a regular meeting I go to, and I found myself into this little pitfall as this meeting I go to regularly. When a newcomer comes in the room, one of the first thing that the chairperson does is they pull out a meeting schedule, and on the back they fold it in half, and if it's a guy, they pass it around to all the guys in the room and sign it to give to that guy with phone numbers, or to women, give it to women. But I noticed that is quite often the way I duck 12-step work. Yeah, give them a, take this number and leave me alone. And this is telling me to say much on this is about getting to know this guy, you know, or person. I got to have a conversation with him, you know. And I got to meet them where they're at, you know. And not everybody comes into AA at the same place, you know. You know, the guy that's been, you know, drinking a half gallon of whiskey a night for 10 years is different than the guy that's, you know, 17 and, you know, whatever. I just, my experiences and with a whole host of unique problems and all that. And what it's telling me here, we can talk about football, we can talk about your problems, we can talk about all that, but at some point I got to steer this into, you know, what's your relationship with alcohol, and I got to tell them about mine, tell them my experience, what happens when I put booze in my body. I've got something happens, this allergy, something physical happens where every drink I take insists on having the next one, and then eventually, when I've just burned everything down, I'm attempting to quit, I'm attempting to stay stopped, I find that I can't do it. And then the other thing that I've found, which is always useful to talk about too, is what happens when I put the plug in the jug too. You know, what does life look like when I put the plug in the jug and I'm not doing anything other than not drinking? I can tell you, those get grisly too, man. This guy's got to be able to connect. This guy, has, in order for him to have any kind of trust in me, he's got to know that I know what I'm talking about, that I have had these experiences, that I am an alcoholic. I'm not something else who's trying to, you know, straighten him out. The theme that it gets played out in this chapter over and over too that I like is the notion that who gets help the most is kind of up for grabs. I know when I show up, I've had that very unique experience a couple times over the years where I'm sitting down with this guy and then we're getting ready to walk away and I go, holy moly, you know what, I feel like I got more out of that deal than this guy did. And that's cool, and I have to stay in the mix with you guys. I need the newcomer, I need the old timer, I need all you guys in my life and help with this deal. So,
thank you. I love this particular paragraph. You know, a lot of people I've tried to help over the years, I haven't had that great a track record as far as them staying sober. You know, try as I will, you know, trying to enable them, you know, I'm thinking I'm helping them, but I'm enabling them. There's one particular instance. I got here in 93. The Navy brought me here, and I left various times in my career to go to different duty stations. In 2004, I moved out to Omaha, Nebraska. I was at STRATCOM. And this is April of 2004. There was a Master Chief that was retiring, and I had only known him for maybe 2 or 3 months, and then he retired. He went on terminal leave, and Ken was a success story. And he was at the right place at the right time to hear the message that I, of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was basically drinking himself to death. A lot of the friends in the Chief's Mess, we were all talking about, you know, Ken's really going downhill. And I had seen Ken a couple times. I'd known of him. But there was one opportunity, probably, I want to say, September or October of the same year. Ken had already retired, and he's living by himself. He was a bachelor for his entire life. He was just drinking himself to death. And another chief and I went out to see him. And it was just under the guise of talking about, he was a hunter, and we were going to talk about hunting stuff. So that's how the conversation started, and this was like 10 o'clock in the morning, and Ken had already been drinking. You could tell. You can tell. And Jeff, my friend with me, he kind of started the conversation, and then I said, I got it from here. And I kind of took Ken aside, and he was talking about See Your Man Alone. And I took Ken aside, and I told him about myself. I broke my anonymity, and I said, you know, Ken, I was once like you. I was drinking myself to death. And I said, you just retired. You have the rest of your life ahead of you. He was like 40 years old. And here you are, you know, what are you doing on a daily basis? And I understand that. You know, I've been there and I've done that. And I'm here to tell you that there is another way. You know, and I broke my anonymity to him. I told him that, you know, it's been a number of years since I've had a drink. I go to meetings on a regular basis, and I want to help you. And I don't know if he heard me or not. He had the deer in the headlights look because he was drunk. And the next day, he called me, and he wanted to go to a meeting. And it was wonderful. And he's still sober to this day. Now, I'm not taking credit for that. My message is that I believe that God placed me in that situation at the exact moment, you know, that I could act as a messenger for Alcoholics Anonymous and for God and say there is another way. You know, you don't have to drink yourself to death. And believe it or not, and, you know, Brad touched upon this, Ken helped me more than I probably helped him. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that sponsoring, helping other people, it forces me to get back into the book. And I find new stuff that's written in there all the time. I mean, I don't remember that being in there 10 years ago. But when I reread it, it takes on a new meaning. And I see a different connotation of what's written. And, you know, Bill Wilson, when they wrote the book Alcoholics Anonymous, he had a way of repeating the same thing over and over again, but different ways. And, you know, I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for people in my life like Ken, who I believe is a success story. Again, nothing to do with me. I was at the right place at the right time. And I took the risk. You know, he could have laughed at me. He could have said, get off my property. It didn't happen, you know. And I'm just glad that I was at the right place at the right time.
Thank y'all. The third reading is also on page 91. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't at this stage refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can if he's not too alcoholic, but insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself.
So this is a continuation of that discussion. And this is, you know, and this is asking me to tell him, you know, when I kind of awoken to the fact that I was sick, or and to tell him as much about my struggles, and I'll tell you, most of the time, the couple times that I've spoke up here, I'm usually, you know, we have the selected readings that I generally, about an hour, 2 hours before I do this, I'll peruse it real quick and try to come up with a few things to say. But I actually spent some time with this stuff last night, and I'll tell you what kind of stood out. It says, show them the mental twist which leads to the first drink. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. And so just a little exercise on it. I just went back to the chapter on alcoholism, is chapter 3, by the way, more about alcoholism. And I actually went and looked at the four guys that chapter talks about, and drinking, and I was looking at these again from the perspective of someone new, and in the midst of that, I found myself, someone 17 years in here, relating to these guys still, that I think like those guys, the man of 30, Jim, Fred, Jay Walker. I can find a little bit of me in all of them. And it's, the funny thing is when I first got here, I couldn't identify with any of that. I couldn't identify with Bill Wilson, anything. There's only occasionally I would hear, you know, at the meeting, or I'd go to a meeting and I'd usually identify with someone at the podium. It was hard for me to identify with these, because it takes work. I have to look for how I'm like other people. And anyway, so this is you know, and so I'm talking more also right here about me attempting to stop, you know, all the ways that I bring everything that I got to defeat alcoholism. And that chapter lays out those the most common ways that we come up to battle our alcoholism. And it's me, and that's exactly those guys in there described me to a T when I got here, and unfortunately still describe me to a certain degree now. But anyway, so and this is a big thing about hope. There's, you know, I like hope. I want to feel hopeful. I really do. If I could stay hopeful all the time, it'd be wonderful. But and the problem is too, my experience is, I actually get too hopeful too quick, you know. And there's an emphasis in this book on hopelessness, about selling them hopelessness. And if you identify, really, if you're an alcoholic, if you really look at this stuff and say, yeah, I got that, then there's no real direction to turn. I'm screwed. I can't solve this by myself. That is hopeless. Problem with guys like me is I get the booze out of my system. 2 days later, I've got it, God. I'm sorry I bothered you the other day about the disaster. I think I got a new plan, and that's me, and it doesn't work, and I end up in this loop, this profound suffering loop, and I'm drinking and in these weird spots. I don't know about I was a guy that every time I quit drinking, in the last couple of years of my drinking, every time I quit drinking, my mind, it was almost like I woke up and my mind was going, you're not drinking today. You're not drinking. You're not drinking. We're not drinking. You know, and it was just like, everything is not drinking. And I'd ride that as long as I could until the weird, and this is the book, it describes it perfectly. And I mean, there was every fiber of me that I really don't want to drink. I really, really should never drink again. And I'm 4 days out, and someone goes, hey, you want a beer? And I'm like, yeah. And that's what this is, what this, like, this obsession we're talking about. I don't know if anyone else, when I think of obsession, I usually think about people. I know about it, being obsessed about people, you know, thinking about her all the time. But this is a, you know, there's another kind of obsession, and it's, the book talks about it. It's a thought that crowds out all others, you know. So that moment that beer comes, I can't. the thought of that drink getting into my system crowds out every form of logic or safety defense mechanism I have, and I end up taking the drink. And I repeated it over and over and over again, and so it's a real big deal to you know, if I'm carrying this message, I better know what the problem is, you know, and the problem is not drinking, it's alcoholism, and this is another one liner I'll throw out there, and because I still like it, is I heard it in a meeting about 10 years ago, and I had to let it seep in, but the guy said, by the way, guys, quitting drinking does not treat alcoholism. And identify, so yep. That's all I got.
I can totally agree with that. You know, tell them how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. You know, this program and the structure of the program, the 12 steps and the first 164 pages, is counterintuitive to me. It shouldn't work, you know, but it only works if I try it. And the results I get proves that it works. But if I think about it, of course it's not going to work. Brad was talking about... Oh, I just lost my train of thought. I know what it was. I had a sponsor when I first moved to this area, and he said that, you know, there's good news and there's bad news. The good news is you never have to drink again. The bad news is that's not the problem. Mm-hmm. What? This is Alcoholics Anonymous, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the point of that was I'm the problem. Alcohol never was the problem. Alcohol was my solution. But I'm the problem. I'm still the problem today if I don't work the solution, which are the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that took me a while to figure out. You know, did I hear him correctly? But that was a valuable lesson. It goes on, you know, it's talking about the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. You know, my original sobriety date was August of 89, and I had about 2 years around Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't say in Alcoholics Anonymous because I really wasn't doing anything. I was around Alcoholics Anonymous. I would go to meetings when it was convenient for me. I would work the steps because my sponsor told me to, not because I wanted to. I wasn't doing anything you people suggested. I was doing this, you know, half-assed, and half measures availed me nothing. There's a concept. You know, where have I read that before? I thought it would at least get me half. It doesn't work that way. I get out of Alcoholics Anonymous exactly what I put into it. You know, and when I think back to when I was drinking and doing my thing, you know, I didn't get drunk sitting next to you on a bar stool watching you drink. I had to partake in the activities. I had to drink the alcohol or whatever party favors I was doing. And the same is true with my sobriety. I don't get sober physically, mentally, spiritually by watching you come to meetings and work the steps and me just sitting there drinking the coffee. It doesn't work that way. Like I said, I get out of it exactly what I put into it. And this mental twist, I never really understood that until I went back out and did some more research. I'm from Baltimore originally, and I got sober up Baltimore to start with, and then I went to an extended treatment facility in York, Pennsylvania, and it was a 90-day halfway house. And there was a guy at the meeting I used to go to. Every time he spoke, "My name is Charlie, and I'm an alcoholic, and the same man will drink again." And me being 22, 23 at the time, you know, knowing it all, "My name's Charlie, I'm an alcoholic, the same man will drink again," I was determined to prove him wrong. I was going to be an overnight sensation. You know, I was not going to drink again, but I wasn't doing anything. And pretty soon I got this wonderful idea I wanted to see the world, but I couldn't do it on my own, so I decided to enlist the aid of my rich Uncle Sam and join the Navy, and I did. And at this point, I stopped going to meetings. Because this was a willpower issue. Thank you very much for your help. I've got it. Have a nice life. And I'm trying to fit in. I went to boot camp, and I went to my school afterwards for my job, and I'm trying to fit in with other people I don't know, but I want to be just like them so they'll accept me. And I was hanging out in slippery places. I was going to the bars drinking ginger ale, Coke, looking at what a great time they're having. And here I am, poor me. And pretty soon it was pour me another drink. And that mental twist they're talking about was, you know, when I got sober, not necessarily the first time, but the second time, You know, we get sober physically, mentally, and then hopefully spiritually. And if I were to relapse, I relapse long before I pick up that drink. First goes the spirituality, then it's the mental, and then finally I physically pick up that drink. And that's exactly what happened when I went back out. And they talk about the progressiveness of this disease. It was very progressive for me. You know, I was only out there for about 7 or 8 years, but that was enough for me. And the way I was drinking, I definitely would not be alive today if I had continued. And when I picked up again after almost 2 years of not touching it, you know, the first night it was like 2 or 3. And I'm watching what I'm drinking. Okay, I'm good, nothing happened. By the second and third night, you know, I'm doing the old behaviors. I'm running out on the bar bills, like they're not going to find me. I'm drunk and they're not going to know. And it just took off where it left off, as if I didn't stop drinking for those 2 years. And thank God I was only out there for about 5 or 6 months. And then I found the rooms again in of all places, Sasebo, Japan, my first duty station. There was a 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper talking about meetings at this restaurant. And one Sunday morning, I walked in there, and that thing was a neon sign. It just jumped out at me. I think it was one of many spiritual awakenings I've had along the way. One more thing I want to say about this is, if you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, you know, when I talk to people, it's not up to me to decide whether or not they're an alcoholic. You know, that's up to them. You know, they may look like a duck, sound like a duck, walk like a duck, swim like a duck, but it's not up to me to call them the duck. They've got to decide that. And, you know, for me personally, I could accept it here because my dad was an alcoholic and he died one. I couldn't admit it here in my heart. You know, that 12 to 15 inches, that's a huge amount of space. And until I could get it here in my heart and realize that I am an alcoholic and I will die one unless I do something about this, I was doomed to failure and I was doomed to repeat my past. But again, it's not up to me to determine. If they admit they're an alcoholic or they think they might be, I can help you. You know, if you still want to try some controlled drinking, have at it. You know, I have yet to see anybody come back and say, oh, it got better. I have yet to hear that. You know, and I make it a point to people that relapse and come back in to go up and talk to them. What happened? And I'd say 9 times out of 10, it was exactly like I described. They stopped going to meetings. It was mental. And then they finally picked up that drink.
Okay, page 92. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is an alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He may choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he live by spiritual principles.
All right, we're continuing this conversation. talk about the conditions of mind and body. That's what this deal is I've got a mind or I've got a body that doesn't process alcohol like my mother or non-alcoholics. So when I put it in this body, every drink needs another drink. You know, alcohol eventually takes me where it wants to take me. And I've got a mind that no matter what happens, whatever, all my best efforts and ideas to stay stop, I've got a mind that always talks me back into it. And it's interesting, it's talking about the doctor, how doctors hate to tell the truth to alcoholics. And there's a great example of this in the book, and it's in the second chapter. We have this guy Roland Hazard, who he was the guy that helped Ebby, who helped Bill. But this guy was a rich guy, and he was an alcoholic, and he was trying to get help, and he got supposedly the second or third best psychiatrist in the world to help him, and he went hung out with this guy for a year, did all kinds of intensive psychotherapy, sends him back home. Within a couple weeks, he's drinking again, and he comes back to this doctor and says, "What's going on?" And he's like, "I got to tell you, you've got the I forget what he said, the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I have never seen anybody like you get well. Most people die." And the guys, and Roland's just like, "Oh my God!" And is any exceptions to this? Yeah, every once in a while, there's these people that have these vital spiritual experiences, and those people seem to be able to not drink. But the you know, it's rare, and so I can see that. I mean, the inadequacy by doctor and. You know, this is back to this hopeless thing. If you got this, more than likely you are doomed. By your own aid, by my own aid, I couldn't seem to help myself. And I really tried, guys. I'm not a dummy. I tried all kinds of clever stuff. And I hung out with books of the brightest thinkers and whatever, everything I could employ. And I can't do this on my own. And the doctors are even afraid to tell me that. And it says, explain that you're doing never realize a pretty good doctor. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism. This is the little caveat in here. It says, because you offer a solution. A doctor doesn't have a solution. I happen to stumble into a way out of this thing that is not only solve the drink problem, but all the other, you know, the bag full of problems that I brought to the room have slowly kind of worked out. And let him ask you the question, if he will. Tell him exactly what happened. You stress the spiritual feature freely. And I'm getting the green light to talk about what happened here, and my experience is, like I kind of said earlier, I've been every kind of AA. I've been a slacker. I've been, you know, full tilt, half ass, just any kind of combination. And I can tell you the most connected, the most happy, most serenity, most peace in my life is usually when I'm very inconvenienced by AA. Inconvenienced by you and the step work and, you know, the stuff. And it's interesting. To this day, I'm still resistant. I'm still, what do you want from me? What do you want, you know? But something happens when I get together with you and especially with the newcomer, when I'm telling the story, you know, telling what happened to me, telling how I got out of the hole that I was in. And the spiritual. I mean, I said earlier this about the mental and physical aspects of it, but AA is really only about spirituality. That's our solution. You're not teaching me mantras or new philosophies or whatever to tackle my alcoholism. You're giving me these actions, these spiritual actions that when I take those, the mess in my life seems to work out, and that's what you keep bringing me back to over and over, this relationship with this power greater than myself. And you know, I know this is the first part where we start talking about God, and me personally, I didn't have a huge God problem. I just was indifferent to God when I got here. I've talked to a lot of other guys that spectrum, diehard churchgoers. I've been a churchgoer all my life, to the guy that wants nothing to do with God. And I can tell you, there's no difference. It doesn't make any difference. to me. You know, as far as working with them, I don't see anyone being any more of an obstacle than the other. So.
The first sentence that was read, continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. I never used to believe it was. You know, at the young age, like I said, 20, 22, 23 when I got in here, I thought it was a moral weakness. And somebody talked about that at a meeting once. You know, he brought up two valid points that, you know, really struck home with me. Because I'm an intelligent individual, so I thought. And it made sense to me what he said. He said that alcoholism is an illness. The American Medical Association said it was in 1957, I think he said. And that the second part of that was that Blue Cross and Blue Shield doesn't pay for moral weaknesses. You know, when it's all about the bottom line, the profit, that's a very valid point. I could understand that kind of language. But I don't have an illness. That's what my mind is telling me. You know, Brad was talking about, you know, he's got a body that can't handle, I got a body that can't handle a drink or a drug, but a mind that wants to keep denying and trying. The next time will be different. It was different, all right. Some of my yets happened, and I don't want to go back there. And I know that I don't have to if I keep doing what you people suggest. You know, I've been sober half my life. Wow. That I get goosebumps when I think about that. But all I got is today. You know, and if I try to stay sober on yesterday's sobriety, I'm going to repeat my past. Because, you know, anytime I've tried to coast in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've always coasted downhill. I've never coasted uphill. It's a physical impossibility. And I know what works. I know the solution. But sometimes my ego tells me, well, you can do it a little bit different. You can put your own spin on things. Doesn't work. And I say that in good nature and jest, you know, having someone who is hard-headed, but had to be taught how to do things and what actually works. It works so well that I don't always do it, if you know what I mean. This is also the second part here. I just got these. I hate reading glasses. I'm still in denial about that. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. You know, it doesn't tell me to tell him what's wrong with him. You know, my family used to do that. When I was drinking and I'd show up at Christmas Day drunk, you know, almost knocked the Christmas tree over, my family would say, you need to stop this for whatever reason. Can't you see you're just like your father? Yeah, yeah, and it was like fuel for my fire. I'll show you, and I would show them what a butthead I could be. But I don't talk about the other individual. I don't point out his character defects, his flaws, whatever. I tell him what happened with me. And that's the biggest difference I've found over the years, you know, getting sober, is that we don't want anything from you people. We don't talk down at you people. You know, we don't talk down upon at us. We tell them what happened with us. And hopefully they'll be able to, you know, share the experience, strength and hope, and realize that if they get honest with themselves, that they're similar. You know, I tried to compare myself out of the rooms when I first got here because I was young, and a lot of the things I heard people talking about, the jails, the institutions, the DUIs, the broken relationships, marriages, the losing the home, none of that happened to me. And I tried to compare myself out of the room. But when I look for the similarities, if I see how I'm alike to you people, that all goes away. It takes away that terminal uniqueness. And I'm grateful for that. You know, I'm grateful I had a really good sponsor that pointed those things out to me. It's also talking about stressing the spiritual feature freely. And choose your own conception of God. The main thing is that he'd be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he lived by spiritual principles. You know, I tread lightly here. I don't jump into God right away. I think that's the end goal, what we're striving for, to be of maximum service to God and our fellows. But I don't want to come across like a Bible thumper or a church person, if you will, even though we're meeting in a church. Mm-hmm. I talk to them about a higher power, and it's important that you believe in something greater than yourself. And I don't know what your beliefs are in this arena, and at that point they usually come for, oh yeah, I believe in God, or I'm an atheist, or I'm an agnostic, or whatever. At least I know where they stand at that point, and I know which way to take the conversation. But I've tried that before from the beginning, and they ran. They looked at me like, oh, you're one of those people. You know, it's like, look, just because I shaved my head and, you know, I haven't had the chin at airports yet, but I know that if I were to go back out drinking or doing something like that, I know that's a possibility. So, anyway, go ahead. That's where that came from.
Thank you. We're running a little short on time, so I'm going to combine the last two paragraphs and have you guys take a few minutes to wrap up. The fifth reading is on page 94, starting with an outline. Outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you're helping him. Make it plain he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. And the sixth and final reading is on page 96, starting with Do Not. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. If you're sure, you are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. He often says that if he had continued to work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance.
I'll just try to keep this quick. We did skip a little bit, and there's a point in here I want to make. We left out a little bit of the last reading from the last one. And then the only thing I want to comment on that is, it says, when dealing with such a person, you'd better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. And it was funny because I was in the group of guys I was hanging out yesterday, someone was telling the story about a newcomer who'd been around for a while, and you know, we talk about the big book, and this person confused it, rightly so, for they thought we were talking about the Bible. And I think that I find that when I'm talking with a new guy, I'm not typically using advanced spiritual descriptions. But the problem I do fall into is AA jargon, that stuff that, having been around here for years, we have our own language, and sometimes I gotta remember this person has no idea. This cat didn't know any of this stuff. So. The rest of this is basically laying out what I did, you know, tell them how, you know, I went through inventory and I made amends and all the stuff, that this going to any length thing is not about standing on your head or whatever. This just means that I was doing the steps. I'm willing to do these steps. And this is what happened as a result of me taking them. And as it says in here, the way I should relate to them is I give this away freely. My only hope, the only thing I ask of you, is you pass this on to the next guy. That's how you pay me back. You do this with other people, and that's how this thing is. And this is what I attempt to do in my life today. And it's sad. And my sponsor is a big help on this, and about just the emphasis, the emphasis on helping other people. It is massive in this book. And there's a line that says, our only aim is to be helpful. And that's what I'm a servant. That's what my spiritual awakening, all the credentials or whatever. Yeah, I'm a humble servant. That's the highest I can be. That's the best I can be in AA. So, thanks.
That is true. I love this sentence here where it talks about the more hopeless he feels, the better. You know, my experience has been that an alcoholic can't stand prosperity. You know, when things are great, you know, and I've got this drinking issue, things are good. My bank account's full, the gas tank's full, you know, I've got a wonderful life. Why do I need the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous? But when I'm down on my luck, though, that's when you got to get the alcoholic. When the major calamities has happened to them. You know, to the normal person, it's like, oh my God, look at this, look at all this stuff that's happened to him. To us, to the alcoholic who's sober, this is the perfect time to talk to them. You know, and it has been. That's been my experience. This other portion here that was read, you know, it's talking about we find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. You know, I told you early on that I don't have a great track record of trying to keep people sober. You know, here I am trying to take credit for it. But throughout all that, I stayed sober. You know, I tried to carry the message. A lot of it, I think, early on was Joe's message. But I was chasing after these people. You know, they weren't doing what I thought they should be doing. And my sponsor kind of pointed that out to me. You know, he's like, you don't need to be a taxi service. You know, well, I'm trying to help them get a job, you know, driving them from Portsmouth to Little Creek every day, you know, and it's like, you don't need to do that, okay? Try to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, not Joe's message. Like I said earlier, Joe's message might get you drunk. And I know that when I practice the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, things work out the way they're supposed to, and I'm okay with it.
Thank you, guys. Yeah. Can we thank our panel? Thank you. We are now going to pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also the intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. At this time, are there any AA-related announcements? I have a couple. So this home group is having our supper and a speaker event Monday, October 16th. I think that's
2 weeks.
2 weeks. 6 p.m. potluck, bring a dish if you can. And at 7 p.m., Billy H. from Madison, Virginia will be speaking. And we've got some, I think we have a few more orange flyers if somebody would like one. Spread the word. And then I've got a flyer for 34th Annual Shenandoah Valley Roundup, Massanutta Springs Conference Center, Harrisonburg, Virginia. That's September 22nd through 24th. If you guys want to see this, it'll be up here. Any other announcements? Okay. Simple Actions is the home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Can I get home group members to raise your hands? Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
Kevin's alcoholic
addict. Hey,
Kevin. Hey, Kevin.
Welcome.
Hey, Ben. Welcome. Glad you're here.
Mike.
Hey, Mike. Glad you're here.
Michelle.
Hey, Michelle. Welcome. Glad you're here.
Anybody else?
I'm Ben.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, Ben.
Welcome. Glad you're here.
Awesome. We have a literature table right here. We have big books for sale at cost, and if you can fold it, it's free for the taking. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you'd like to purchase one. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you to not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come up and ask me any questions you might have. Just as a reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church when you're smoking. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, which is www.simpleactions.net. In closing, can we thank our panel one more time?